Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Central Depository Services India Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the talk mode. If you're traveling or in a crowded place, please mute or unmute your lines by pressing star and six on your touchtone phone. We also request the participants not to place the call on hold during the conference call. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nimesh Kittur. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to CDSL conference call. From CDSL management team, we have Mr. Girish Amesara, who is the CFO of CDSL, Mr. Sunil Alvarez, who is MD CEO of CDSL Ventures Limited, and Mr. Ram Kumar, who is Chief of Head of Business Development and Operations. I now request Nirav to open the floor for discussion.
Thank you very much, and I open the lines for questions.
Hello, you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, yeah. We are able to hear you.
Hi, this is Sarah from Manulife Investments, and I have on the line with me Prakash Chaudhary. So he's the portfolio manager on our team. And maybe just to give you some background on us, we're based in Toronto. We manage about $27 billion of North American and global equities, and we are long-only investors and long-term, and we look to invest in businesses for the long-term. So that's just some background on us, and we're just looking to get some more confidence in the growth profile of the business, and then get a better understanding of the regulatory environment. It's kind of the main objectives that we have. So I had some specific questions prepared, but maybe I'll ask you, you know, what's that? Is there a specific way that you would prefer to go through this call, or can I just start with questions?
So you can go ahead with your questions. We can start this discussion.
Okay, so start with questions? Sure. Okay, so one of the questions that we have is that we understand that there's two depositories in India, so being NDSL and then yourself, so CDSL. And from our understanding, the NDSL is linked to the NSE and CDSL linked to the BSE, the Bombay Stock Exchange. So maybe just to help us with just an understanding, can you give us maybe the background on the regulatory environment? Because from our understanding, there are portions of your business and price structure that is regulated. So just trying to understand just kind of the competitive landscape and industry structure between those two entities.
Just to reiterate, CDSL was promoted by BSE and other investors, and now CDSL is the only listed company in Asia Pacific region, and all the shareholders are public shareholders, and BSE holds around 20% in CDSL, and the competition, that is NSDL, was promoted by NSE, and there it remains. And you were asking on the pricing. Our income is largely contributed by transaction charges, IPO core protection, annual issuer charges income, online documentation charges with respect to our subsidiary, and other miscellaneous income. Now, annual issuer charge income is a regulated income. The charges that we levy to our customer who are the companies, listed companies who are admitted with both the depositories, are regulated by SEBI. And the charge structure is based on the share capital that is admitted with the depository as on 31st of March. Based on every 31st March, based on that share capital, the invoicing is done in the month of April. And the structure starts from, based on the capital structure, it starts from minimum fee of 5,000 rupees and for unlisted company, and 9,000 for listed companies up to 75,000 charge, which is the maximum charge that is levied based on the capital structure. Apart from that, on the average folio holding during the previous year, at a folio rate per folio 11 rupees is also calculated, and the levy on the company is made by comparison of the structure based charge and the folio based charge. Whichever is higher is levied on the company, and that is annual issuer charges. Thereafter, transaction charge is based on
Can I just ask a quick question on the annual issuer charge?
So yes,
so our understanding, that charge per folio, so that 11 rupees, that actually increased back in, I believe it was 2009. But can you just give us a better understanding of why the regulator raised prices, and if you have any visibility on, I guess, price increases for this part of your business?
So the last charge increase effected by the regulator was in 2015. Prior to that, the charge increase was done in 2000. So, as a practice, every 5 years, the regulator has been allowing the increase in the annual issuer charges. In 2020, the same was due for increasing the charge. However, considering the pandemic situation, we have not yet decided to go to the regulator seeking increase in charge. Basically, this activity is a joint activity between both the depositories. So both the depositories has to make a representation to SEBI, which is our regulator. And based on the representation, SEBI may consider revision based on the discussion that they have with the depositories. So considering this pandemic situation, we have not yet gone to SEBI, and that's the situation as of now.
Okay. And I guess that would be, when you're raising prices, it would be all the companies that would need to list that would be charged to them. So maybe as well, one of the questions we had was, if you're a company and you're either, if you're listed and you need to be materialized, how do you choose between, how do these companies choose between using NDSL versus CDSL? And how do they make that decision? Do they raise capital, or do they initially go public? Do they need to list with both stock exchanges? Can you help us?
Yes, I'm Ram Kumar here. A listed company, as per the present regulation, has to admit the securities with both the depositories. So a listed company doesn't have a choice of one over the other.
Okay. And then I guess how, if companies need to raise additional capital, how do they choose between NDSL and CDSL?
The same logic applies, ma'am. When they want to do additional capital, increase capital, it could be by the preferential allotment, or it could be rights, or it could be a bonus. So all these are all going to the demat account holders only. To that extent, they have to admit with both, point number one, both depositories, that is, point number one. Point number two is, since the existing shares are listed, by definition, the additional capital, the shares covered by the additional capital also need to be listed. So we go back to the earlier regulation, which says that every listed company should be admitted to both the depositories. That is the third point. The fourth is, there is also a SEBI rule which says that all allotments will be made only in the DMAT form. So to that extent, a person who is coming out with a new issue, a person means a company coming out with a new issue, or is coming out with a preferential allotment or right, will necessarily be giving allotment only in the DMAT form in either of the depositories.
Okay, that helps. And then I guess just my last question then on the annual issuer charges, can you help us quantify, so we've read, you know, a number of data points around how many companies still need to dematerialize versus, you know, how many companies exist in India. Can you just help us understand what the opportunity is going forward for how many companies, you know, still need to go through this process? And if we're thinking, you know, 10 years out, how does the growth profile for this annual issuer charges piece of the business change?
Ma'am, we don't, forecast into the future in terms of saying how much we'll be able to, bill or how much we'll be able to receive. That is point number one. Point number two is presently every listed company is admitted with both the depositories. So to take your, take the discussion further, any company that gets listed, henceforth will need to necessarily be admitted with both the depositories. So all these IPOs that you would be aware of that comes or hits the market would need to be admitted with both the depositories. That is point number one. Point number two is that presently any unlisted company means the ones which is not listed in the stock exchanges, need to get the shares dematerialized as and when there is a transfer or a fresh allotment to be done by that unlisted company. So this is what the rules are. So there are very few unlisted companies which go for additional capital or capital infusion or they get any transfers because it is all closely held companies, most of the unlisted companies. So that probably answers your question, ma'am.
Okay, there are very few unlisted companies and any company that wants to raise capital will have to go through both.
No, ma'am. No, there are more than a lakh of unlisted companies, but the companies which would go in for additional capital or the companies which would go in for transfers, because some investor within that company requested for transfer, would be very small, ma'am.
Okay.
1 lakh is 100,000. 1 lakh would be around 100,000. So it is about 110,000 in terms of number of unlisted companies.
Sorry, just as Prakash, just to clarify. So, because our understanding was that there was going to be a large number of companies that still need to dematerialize of that 100,000 companies that are still private. Are you saying there are not many more companies that need to dematerialize?
I would like to correct this understanding. What I mentioned is there are 110,000 odd unlisted companies, but the trigger point for the unlisted companies to admit the securities in the depository would be either that company is going for fresh capital or capital infusion, as we call it, or the shareholders going for transfer. Only then the company needs to admit. So an unlisted company, although there are 110,000 companies, very few of them would be in a situation where for infusion of capital or the shareholders within that company would like to do a transfer.
It's just that last point that you mentioned that's confusing us, I think, is when you say there's very few.
In an unlisted company, if the unlisted company is adequately capitalized, they will not fall in the bracket of having to compulsorily demat the securities.
Right, but it's difficult to ascertain of those 110,000, how many may need to raise capital. Is that correct?
That is perfect. Your understanding is right.
Okay, sorry. And I just have one more question before I pass it back to my colleague, Sarah. When you talked about the annual issuer income, you mentioned that companies must admit with both CDSL and NSDL. But my question is, does that mean the revenue that is generated by CDSL and NSDL for annual issuer income is exactly the same for both companies, because every company that has dematerialized must pay a regulated amount to both companies? Is that correct?
It is partially right. Slab-wise, if you see, the rates are exactly same in NSDL, CDSL, but there is also a rider on number of folios. As Madam mentioned sometime back, 11 rupees per folio. If the number of folios is more multiplied by 11 is more than the slab rate, then that depository gets to get stands to get more income. So to that extent, the income is derived from the number of folios held by the depository. Folios means account, demat account number.
Okay, and folios correlate with the number of individual and clients that own securities. Is that correct?
Right. Perfect.
Okay, back to you, Sarah.
I think that's clear. So I get maybe just one last piece on that. So So when you say it's determined by the number of folios, I guess maybe a different way to ask would be, what, why would there be a different number of folios at the different, at the different depositories? Or what would be the
way, the way it works, ma'am, is that the investor opens the account with the through a depository participant of the depository. So when he opens the account, okay, he is agnostic whether he's opening it in CDSL or NSDL. So there is a possibility that there are more number of shareholder accounts of a particular company in CDSL as compared to NSDL. So in that case, the annual issuer fee on CDSL would be higher. It's not necessary that the investor has to open both accounts. Investor can open an account either with a CDSL depository or with an NSDL depository. So if I have, about 10,000 investors in a particular company, say 7,000 would have opened in CDSL, then if I take 7,000 and multiply by 11, obviously the income on CDSL would be higher. So that's how it works.
Wow. Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. So that, so that means that, okay, so, okay, that makes sense. So it's the, it depends on the number of accounts, and it's the actual company that pays. Okay,
so,
that makes sense.
So,
and it's
effectively, there are two ways we bill the customers. One is based on their issued capital or paid up capital, and secondly is on the number of folios, whichever is higher.
Right, okay. Okay, I think that helps. Okay, so I think that was it on the, maybe if we can, I think I cut you off before when we were starting to talk about the transaction income. And maybe if we can
Sarah, I just realized I've got one more question on the annual issuer income before we go on to the transaction. I just was thinking back to when you talked about increasing prices. You mentioned that both I want to clarify this. Do both NSDL and CDSL have to cooperate and both agree to propose to SEBI to request an increase in price, and do they, do both CDSL and NSDL have to come to an agreement on how much that price increase would be before getting a price increase? What I'm trying to understand is if you wanted an increase but NSDL did not, would that prevent any price increase? And then attached to that question or related to that question is what are the incentives that NSDL has to increase prices, and what are your incentives in the sense that is management compensated, is there variable compensation to management at CDSL to grow profits, and maybe you can elaborate on that.
See, so far as both the depositories are concerned, there is an incentive in the sense it adds both to the top line and to the bottom line whenever there is an increase in the pricing. Okay. So far as whether we could go it alone, it would be difficult in the sense because these are guidelines issued by the regulator so far as the charges are concerned. So once the regulator issues directive saying that these are the annual issuer charges, then it becomes applicable for both depositories. Point number three, the question which you asked is whether CDSL can go ahead and NSDL may not join in. If that happens, then maybe the regulator might not agree to increase the charges. So basically, there are a lot of factors which the regulator also decides whether there is any justification in increasing the charges. Okay, so earlier it has happened every 5 years, but that is not you know, to say that it will happen every 5 years. Okay, it is just a coincidence it has happened every 5 years. And point number four is there a variable income component of the income for the management? Yes, there is some. I think maybe my CFO will be able to throw more light on that.
So, in case of if you are asking a question for on a variable component in employee cost, there is, yes, there is a percentage of variable component which is you know, decided by the nomination and remuneration committee and the board of directors for employees.
Okay, that's helpful. Sarah, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. I was just, I think you were going to speak on the transaction income. So next, just as it relates to the regulated portion. And from my understanding, this is the charge that this is the DP, the depository participant pays this charge, and it's based on trading activity that's directed by the end client. But maybe if you can just start just on what that business is exactly, and then if you want to touch on it from a regulatory perspective, because I do believe that the price per trade is going down. So if you can just provide some color on that.
So that this transaction charges are levied on depository participants by the depositories, and the transaction charges is levied on debit happening in the demat account. The rate of transaction charges is for CDSL, it is starting from 5.5 rupees 50 paise per transaction, and it goes down till 4 rupees 25 paisa based on the volumes generated by the depository participant. And the competition charge a flat rate of 5 rupees per transaction. I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, and maybe just on, yeah, the price going down, I guess. Maybe just on them lowering prices, like, is there a floor to how low that price could go? And maybe if what I was thinking, because I've read about the rise of online brokerage platforms or online trading platforms, and just curious as to, you know, if the depository participants are paying this fee, like, who ends up absorbing the cost if these online brokerages come in as a low-cost competitor? If you can help me understand that part.
See, on the floor side, the lowest we go is to 4 rupees 25 paise, Indian rupees, and that is. And that depends on the volume of transactions done by the depository participant. So the deposit, we have a slab rate structure. So we start at 5 rupees 50 paise, and as the volume of transactions increase, we charge a lower rate of 4 rupees 25 paise. That's the lowest that can go to. Now, so far as the depository participants are concerned, they levy a markup and they charge the end investor. So the end investor may be online or he may be going physically to the depository participant. The depository participant has a mechanism where he debits the account of the investor. So that is how it works. I hope that answers your question.
And maybe just on the competitive piece, so NDSL, from my understanding, you do have some benefits, or maybe it would be great if you could talk about the competitive advantage that CDSL has. And I believe it would be just the depository participant network that you have. But my question is, why doesn't NDSL, I think the difference is that they have higher account minimums, and there are these benefits of opening a PO account, but why does NDSL compete?
Ma'am, we are very clear that from a competitive perspective, okay, we believed right from the beginning that as we have a wider network of participants, we will have more accounts which will get added into CDSL. So over a period of time, we have added about 600 participants. And NDSL has about, NSDL has about 275 odd participants. Secondly, we also believe that it is, you know, the way the tariff structure is being designed in the depositories is that only if there are transactions in an account, the depository gets some revenue so far as transactions are concerned. So at that point in time, we focused on, you know, transacting brokers who would have large number of transactions, so that if they become participants, that will really add to the transacting income. So that's how we have had a large number of brokers, okay, who do a large number of transactions, and that adds substantially to our transacting income. And so also most of the large fintechs have joined up with CDSL. And again, out there, there is a large number of transactions and that adds to our transacting income. As against NSDL, they had more of, institutional DPs or depository participants. So many of those accounts, I would say, are not as active as the accounts which are there with the brokers. So I hope that answers your question.
Could I just ask one clarification question? When you say NSDL has mainly institutional clients, would that be something like a large pension fund manager who's would use, I guess, the DP account would be with NSDL? Is that what you mean, rather than retail trading?
Let me clarify. NSDL would have both retail accounts as well as institutional accounts. But since they started off almost 2.5-3 years earlier to CDSL, and at that point in time, the regulator made it mandatory to hold securities in the DMAT form, most custodians, develop their systems for their institutional clients for NSDL only. So that has continued over a period of time. But so far as retail is concerned, we have almost about 50 million accounts, whereas NSDL has around 23 million accounts, I would say, as of date. So to a large extent, we are like a retail depository, and where all the retail customers have, most of the retail customers have their accounts with us. To give you an example, I mean, we are almost on 70% market share, and NSDL would have a large percentage of the institutional accounts.
Okay, and my understanding, institutional accounts would be accounts on behalf of investors who have larger amounts of assets,
yeah,
or capital, to like pension funds and mutual fund companies. Is that
to answer your question, both the depositories have retail as well as institutional accounts. The only difference is NSDL would have a larger percentage of institutional accounts, whereas CDSL would have both institutional as well as retail accounts, but a larger percentage of retail accounts.
Okay, and is there a chance that you could, so you've got greater market share in the retail accounts, but what would need to occur for you to have a bigger market share in the institutional accounts?
I would require more of the institutional accounts to, I mean, institutions to open accounts with us and then ensure that they transact to CDSL. And also, that the custodian support us to that extent.
Sorry, I just want to understand, when you say open accounts with you, the institutions don't, from my understanding, they don't open the account directly with yourself. They would open it with a DP.
The custodian is also a DP, that's right.
Okay. So really, would you not need to convince the custodian to switch to use you rather than NSDL? Would it not really be that the institution would be sort of agnostic as to which whether they're using NSDL or yourselves, and it's more their bigger decision is which custodian they use? Is that correct?
No, it's more a matter of, it's more a business call, in the sense that today we charge, say, 5.50 rupees, and NSDL charges 5 rupees at the highest lab. And in terms of custodial transactions, they are very, compared to retail transactions, they are very few. So it should make, sometimes it does not make business sense for them. But at the same time, we have been, adding a lot of facilities to our services to try and, convince these custodians to push CDSL also on the institutional side.
Okay, so sorry, I think I understood you correct. Even though there's a pricing difference between CDSL and NSDL, that's a smaller portion of the cost of an institution versus a custodian.
See, one thing
cost,
you have
is that
to,
correct?
No, you have to understand how the depositories tariff structure works out here. Here, for every debit into an account, whether it is an institutional account or a retail account, I levy a charge of, say, 5.50 rupees, and NSDL levies a charge of 5 rupees. Okay. You can say almost 99% of the transactions which are billed today, they come from retail accounts. So rather, my focus has been totally on retail accounts, I would say. Though we would be very happy to add institutional accounts as well, but the revenue actually comes from more of retail accounts.
Understood, because institutions don't make many debit transactions,
absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely, and even if they do that, it comes, there are large tranches of transactions, so there will be huge volumes out there, but in terms of revenue, I will generate just say 5.50 rupees. So to give you an example, whether I for institution, whether I do a 1 billion transaction also, I generate 5.50 rupees. And for a retail investor, if I do a 1 rupee transaction also, I will be generating 5.50 rupees. So right now we are totally focused on volume than on the retail customer.
Okay, that's clear now. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back to Sarah.
Maybe I guess in what would be the largest driver, or how do we think about growth of transaction income? Not necessarily a number, but what are the drivers of growth for this segment over the long term?
See, one of the drivers is the number of accounts which get added, because as the number of accounts get added, the transactions would definitely come in over a period of 6 months once the account is open. And secondly, once the transactions happen and securities are held in that account, the annual issuer fees also would kick in, the folio income would kick in for us. So these are two major drivers for us. And also, the primary market is the second driver, in the sense that whenever there are large number of IPOs, a large number of accounts get added into the depository. So that's the second driver for, you know, the depository market.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Can you just repeat that last part on the secondary market?
No. As I said, so far has we have the primary markets. If they tend to be very buoyant, then a large number of IPOs, when they hit the market, it helps in number of accounts getting added at that point in time. So that's the second driver for the depositories account growth.
I think that was my last question on that, on the transaction income, but was there anything I missed on, I guess, that portion of the business? I was thinking if we could speak about the KYC or the CVL business and some of those other services and any other parts of the business that were missing in terms of, if, you know, other growing parts of the business. Or how other parts
of the survive. So far as the KYC business is concerned, we were the pioneers of the KYC, centralized KYC in the country. We conceptualized, designed, and implemented the first KYC registration agency in around 2006 with the, ANMI, that is the AMFI, Association of Mutual Funds. And we ran it for about 4 years, then the regulator made it mandatory in 2011 for the entire capital markets by, coming out with the KYC regulations. And since then, we are, one of the largest KYC registration agencies in the country. And there are two legs to the charges. One is, any intermediary can create a KYC of an investor, and we charge 20 rupees out there. And once that KYC is created and pushed into the KRA, I mean, the investor decides to invest in through any other intermediary and he is required to do his KYC, then he can go to intermediary B and quote his PAN number. Then the intermediary can fetch the KYC from the KRA and he is levied a charge of 35 rupees. So that's how the KYC model works in India. And we also have, recently registered as an agency for providing Aadhaar-based eKYC. And using Aadhaar-based eKYC, an investor can do his eKYC, he can do his KYC online, and which can subsequently be pushed into the KRA. So I hope that answers your question, ma'am.
Okay, no, that's great. And I guess it sounds like the driver of growth would be the opening of additional beneficiary owner accounts. Is that correct? That would be kind of the main driver of the growth, because every time they open an account, I assume you'd have to set up an
account. It's not only beneficiary account. It could be a broking account. It could be a DMAT account, or it could be any other account which is open in the capital markets. Then if the investor's KYC is done, then the record is fetched. Otherwise, if the record is not available in the KRA, then the record has to be created and uploaded into the KRA.
Okay, that's wonderful. And then I guess this question came to mind, but I was just thinking about the depository participant. This is somewhat unrelated, but will help in my understanding. So the depository participant, I noticed that there's a difference in the number of, there's that difference in the number of DPs registered with NDSL versus CDSL. How does the depository participant decide which depository to be registered with? And if they have a client that comes to them, how are they choosing whether to open the account with NDSL or CDSL? How does the DP make that decision?
See, that the depository participants, whoever decides to first and foremost register with whichever depository, they would be getting proposals from both the depositories and then they evaluate. That is one. Point number two is it's also a lot of marketing from both the depository side to the depository participant. And then whichever depository is successful, they are able to convert that particular intermediary as their depository participant. And also among the depository participants also, they also speak to other intermediaries and then decide what is good for them. So that's how it works out, Yama.
Okay.
Just to be clear, each depository participant is either with CDSL or NSDL, right? You can't be with both. It's a choice to one or the other. Is that correct?
No, that's incorrect. Each depository participant can be either with CDSL or with NSDL or with both. So that's how it works.
So if they're with, maybe this is where I'm a bit confused. If they're with both and they're attracting clients, on a client-by-client basis, how are they choosing whether they use CDSL or NSDL? Because they only can use each end client will only be with either CDSL or NSDL. Is that not correct? So I would have thought they would choose one for all their clients. If not, how are they choosing for each individual client?
Okay, so there are three ways they normally do it. One is if a depository participant is both with CDSL and NSDL, one is that he may decide that certain channels are allocated to CDSL and certain channels are allocated to NSDL. So some depository participants have a digital channel, so which they may allocate to CDSL. If somebody may have a physical channel where, applications are collected at the branches, where he may allocate only to NSDL. Okay. Then there are large players like banks. So certain banks may allocate certain branches only to CDSL, certain branches only to NSDL. Depository participants who are only online, then they give an option whether you want a CDSL or NSDL account. So you have all types of permutation combinations which actually work out. I hope that answers your question, sir.
Sorry, just with the when you said online, you give they get the option of CDSL or NSDL. Is that the end participant, or is it the DP that gets that option?
No, it is the end investor who gets the option, because he comes online to the participant's website and he opens an account. He doesn't come to me directly to open an account.
Okay, so the end investor chooses CDSL or NSDL, is that correct?
Yeah, some of the participants do give an option online.
Some of the DPs. Some DPs give the option to their customers to choose.
That's it.
Okay, and why it would be very confusing to, especially when you mentioned that some banks would use, some branches would use CDSL and others would use NDSL. Does this have something to do with, I think somewhere I read that NDSL or NSDL uses on-premise servers, whereas CDSL uses a cloud approach to running all the background infrastructure. Is that why some banks might choose one or the other? And could you just elaborate on how that choice is made by DPs?
Sir, we are also, CDSL is also running on-prem only. The data center is in our control. To that extent, all the data related to CDSL in terms of the details of the account, details of the transaction is stored in our server. So it's on-prem. As far as on-prem issue is concerned, both NSL and CDSL have that on-prem concept. So we are not storing anything on cloud. That is point number one. Point number two is the DP chooses convenience over any other thing. Convenience and money. So if the DP feels the volumes are going to be high, then they will choose CDSL over NSL, because then he gets the benefit of about 20-25% reduction on the transaction charges, because our lowest charge is 4.25 rupees as against 5 rupees charged by the competitor. So that would be one deciding reason. Another would be the setup cost, which the DP may feel is lesser in one depository over the other. This is the second reason. And third is the of course the IT services that you were talking about, but there is not much to choose, because both of us are using on-prem, both of us are having equally good cyber security checks in place.
Okay, that's helpful. So both of you are using on-premise solutions, but when you said the setup cost might be different, are your setup costs lower in general than NSDL's?
Yeah. Correct.
You said yes, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. No, I think this is helpful. So the DP will choose based on transaction volume. So they'd have an estimate of whether their customers are generally going to be doing a lot of debits, and if they are, then they're going to benefit from that volume discount. And if they're not, then it may not make a large difference. So they may, for whatever reason, choose NSDL. I guess I'm trying to think of any reason. Maybe the other way to ask this question is, in what scenario would NSDL be more convenient for a DP? Because even if the transaction volume is very low, I guess that's the point, is it's still five rupees is still cheaper than 5.50 rupees. So if it's very low, it's possible then it's cheaper to use NSDL. Is that correct?
That is to per DP who knows for sure that his transactions are going to be very limited. He may want to use the NSDL over CDSL for that reason of that 50% difference that you spoke about. But such DPs would be large DPs. That is point number one. And large DPs typically would be having both depositories in place. The reason being, they wouldn't want to, tell their clients no. Suppose there is a client who comes to a DP saying, I want to open account through CDSL. And while the DP has got only account with NSDL, they may be losing the customer. So to that extent, all large entities there are about maybe about 180-200 DPs who are common. Common means they are having registration with NSDL as well as CDSL. So why they are having that is because they don't want to, they want to give choice to the customer as to whether they want to open account with CDSL or with NSDL. So basically the call is a business call, and also the convenience of the operations team of that particular operations, the management team of that particular entity, the DP entity.
Okay, that's helpful. So does that mean that you're spending some of your marketing to end customers to let them know why using CDSL might be a better service for them versus NSDL?
We do investor awareness programs where we speak about the advantages of holding securities in the DMAT form, etc. That is under the banner of CDSL Investor Protection Fund. That is one. So indirectly, we are talking about CDSL, point number one. Point number two is more than us marketing to the end customer about the virtues of CDSL or the depository. It is the DP who drives the customer towards choosing one or the other. So it is the DP who does the marketing in terms of saying open account here, open account there. And then whatever benefits he wants to give, he will extend it to the end customer related to which depository he wants to, give advantage to.
Okay, that's clear. I'll pass it back to Sarah.
Okay, I just had one last question before I wanted to ask some questions just on the expenses, but I have the last question as it comes to NDSL versus CDSL. It's just from everything that I understand about the rise of retail investing in India and just a lot of the there's the shift in volumes, and you've obviously been focusing on the retail investor. How come, why wouldn't NDSL compete if that is higher growth, I guess, in terms of number of transactions, number of accounts, the annual issuer income is all linked to the retail investors. So why doesn't NDSL, compete over the long run?
Ma'am, that is a question that should be posed to NSDL. So we wouldn't be in a position to answer as to why the competitor would like to compete, not compete.
Right. Okay.
Maybe just ask the question differently. Is there any reason that NSDL couldn't change its pricing structure to match yours?
No, I think it's not that it's DVA having a larger retail share only because of pricing. There have been various other factors. And I think one is that from the depository participants, we have been more proactive in, giving them more solutions in terms of setting up their business as well as, helping them expand their business. To that extent, we've had a larger share of depository participants, and it is the depository participants who actually drive the business. So pricing is one part, but it is not the only thing which actually drives the business.
Okay, that's helpful. Maybe you could elaborate on what is it specifically that you've done to help the DPs to expand their market share that NSDL hasn't provided their DPs?
So it's more a matter of internal strategy. So I really wouldn't like to discuss this in the public domain.
Okay, understood. Sarah, back to you.
I guess before I have some questions on just expenses and how to think about the cost base, was there any other part of the business that we missed that would be a driver of growth? I know that there's, other segments with online services and other pieces, but is there any other growth pieces that we missed from a top-line perspective?
I think the discussion has fairly covered everything.
Okay, beautiful. Maybe just on costs then. Can you just highlight what the main expense items would be and how much of your cost base would be fixed fixed versus variable and how to think about expense growth relative to top line growth.
Just to touch upon the expense part, see, largely our costs are divided into four main areas. One is employee cost, second is technological cost, third is regulatory cost, and the last portion is the other ancillary costs like auditor remuneration, business promotion, or the miscellaneous expenses, or rent, office maintenance, postage, telephone. So all these are part of the ancillary costs which are associated with the business. Now, talking about technological costs, generally technological cost would have an inflationary cost escalation of 10 to 15%, and at the same time there are various regulatory push that is required to be implemented. So we may incur additional cost towards those activities. For example, this year we implemented EDIS facility, and last year we also implemented the margin system, pledge margin system. So that required additional development. And talking about employee cost will generally would be having inflationary expenditure of roughly 10 to 15% once again. And the regulatory cost largely contains on a charge which is levied on the depository, which is levied based on a SEBI regulation, which requires us to charge 5% of our operating profits to be paid to the investor protection funds. The regulatory cost mainly consists of this charge, and apart from that, there are certain fees that we have to pay to SEBI based on the collection that we make from the issuer income. So largely this covers the overall cost structure. I hope I have answered you.
Right. Okay. So maybe just on those tech costs and the additional costs to incur, how long, I guess, how long are you going to have to make those investments? And I guess, yeah, going forward, how much spend is there required for those ongoing or additional costs?
See, we are a technological, in a way, we are a technological company. We are maintaining, investors' data electronically. So this cost is going to remain for a longer time, and we are going to incur this cost. But if you ask me to put up a value to it right now for future, then I will not be able to do it. What I can say that this, whatever cost we are incurring is going to stay.
Okay. I was going to say, Prakash, did you
ask a question? Yeah, maybe just ask a question a little bit differently. Do you have any commentary on margin for your business in terms of is there room for improvement on margin, or are there reasons why margin might come under pressure and fall?
At present, if you look at our margin, we are doing fairly well. And, pressure would be something like, we cannot estimate on the transactions which are going to happen in the market. So that risk is always there, that in case of an, lower transaction in the capital market, we may have lesser amount of transaction charges. So that risk is going to there for both the depositories and for stock exchange. I hope I have answered your question.
Okay, so if we say that maybe another way to ask is there scale in your business? So if we assumed that transactions doubled, would your margins improve? Because are there some portion of your costs that are fixed? Because you did mention SEBIs are variable, directly variable with your operating profit. But is the rest of your profits relatively, or rest of your cost structure relatively fixed?
The I would not comment on any futuristic statement, but your assumption is correct.
Okay, that's helpful on the cost and margin. Sarah, back to you.
Sure. So I think that was all that I had. Just maybe a question. Sorry, I'm just scrolling through to make sure I didn't miss anything here. Maybe just the last piece as a management team, how are you incentivized to drive return for shareholders? Like, are you incentivized based on, you know, growth, growing margins, or is it return on capital, or how are you incentivized to earn a shareholder return?
See, currently our dividend policy is at a 60%. Generally, we pay 60% of our net profit earned as a dividend. So that we are going to continue as per our dividend policy, and that's about it.
Maybe I'll just ask the question a little differently. Our understanding is that senior management is appointed by the regulator for CDSL. If I'm incorrect, let's just start there. How is senior management of CDSL determined? Do shareholders propose a board or and then just how does senior management select it? Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
So, as per the dividend policy, generally company recommends to the board of director, and board of director recommend to shareholders. Shareholders approves the dividend, and that's how dividend gets paid to the shareholder. This is the structure defined under the Companies Act in India.
Sorry, I'm not actually asking about the dividend. I'm more asking about the selection and the appointment of management in terms of the CEO, the CFO. How are those positions decided on?
So generally, in case of a managing director or in case of a senior management, the candidates are identified through agency or by issuing a public notice in newspaper, and a committee of the board of director selects the candidates. In case of managing director, the selection has to be approved by the board of director, then shareholder, and then it goes to SEBI for their approval. And based on SEBI's approval, the managing director is appointed. In case of senior management, the board of director takes the final call.
Okay, great. So in fact, the private shareholders of CDSL have an opportunity to select and influence who the managing directors are, and to select the board of directors. It's just that SEBI also needs to approve it. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's right.
So the structure of board of directors specified by SEBI is that a majority shareholder should be public interest directors, and these public interest directors are also appointed. Final approval of appointment of public interest directors is done by SEBI. So currently, if you look at our board of director structure, we have 5 public interest directors, 1 managing director, and 2 shareholders directors. So what you are saying may not be, you know, correct always. There is lesser possibility to influence the directors in such a scenario. And ultimately, SEBI decides as to who should be appointed as managing director. So when company puts a proposal, company has to provide minimum 2 names to SEBI for appointment of public interest directors. And similarly, for whenever there is a proposal sent for appointment of managing director to SEBI for their approval, minimum 2 names has to be provided.
Okay, and why does SEBI want so much control over the board of directors?
I cannot comment on that aspect, because these are regulations in India, and we have to follow those regulations. Basically, this
okay,
are, those regulations are applicable for all market infrastructure institutions. So basically, all stock exchanges and depository has to follow this regulation in India.
Okay, understood. Just before we run out of time, is there a direct contact information like an email or that we could have of yourselves so that if we want to schedule a follow-up call or potentially when COVID's over a visit in person, we could communicate directly rather than going through a broker? Is there some way we could get your best contact information?
We can provide the email addresses. There is no issue.
Sure.
Sarah, you can send the mail addresses to me. I'll forward it to the management. Thank you.
Sorry, did you say that we can send an email to you and you'll forward it to management?
Yes, I'll do that.
Sorry, and what's your email, sorry?
It's jatin.damania@kotak.com.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sarah, do you have that email?
Yes, I have that.
Okay, and then maybe if management could respond to that so that we have their direct email, that would be great. Sarah, do you have any other questions?
That was it for me. I didn't have any more.
Okay, I think I'm out of questions for now as well, so I appreciate the time. And Sarah, do you want to close up or do you want me to close up?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and apologies for what had happened last week. I got the notice late and then it was 12:30 a.m. here. So I apologize for that and we're really, really appreciative of your time. So thank you again and thank you, Jatin, for helping facilitate this.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
The team of CDSL. Thank you, Nilesh. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Central Depository Service Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.